Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bucks never stop here. You're listening to Green and Growing, hosted by Sparky Pfeiffer and Nathan Marzion.
Hey, it's Sparky Pfeiffer, 1250 AM, The Fan, beautiful Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and a beautiful night for Bucks basketball. 64 points for Giannis tonight, a new Bucks career single-game scoring record, surpassing Michael Redd from years and years and years ago. And joining me, filling in for Nathan Marzion, who is at the game tonight, is Brian Sampson of Bucks Film Room. Follow him on Twitter at Bucks Film Room. Of course, also writes for Forbes and Daring Land Express. First time being on Green and Growing for Brian. First time of me interviewing him in general. I think my guy Bart Winkler has had you on in the past, if memory serves correct. Is that right, Bart? Brian?
No, I don't think so. I think this is my first time making any of the rounds.
All right.
Maybe
good.
He did. My memory's not the best either, so maybe.
Okay, that's all right. Either way, I'm glad you're on. I enjoy your Twitter account and your writing and everything that you do. So the Bucks win tonight 140-126 over the Indiana Pacers. And first, I'd like, before we get into Giannis and the craziness that ensued after the game, him running up the tunnel towards Carlisle and the team and all that nonsense that's going on, I want to first start off. I want to go back to the first quarter and the shoulder hit, forearm hit into Halliburton for no apparent reason. And then they get separated and they seem fine. Everything is fine, whatever. And Marcus Johnson, who was making it sound on the Bally Sports Wisconsin broadcast, says, "You want to run your mouth, young man? Fine, but we're going to let you know who's boss." And then you fast forward a couple minutes and then Portis goes up for a shot and comes down with his right hand and pops the dude in the nose, Jackson in the nose. Gives him a bloody nose. It was just interesting that the Bucks came out as the aggressor. The Bucks came out as the chippy team and really kind of set the tone early on. And really, from that point forward, kind of had control of this basketball game. And the young Indiana Pacers couldn't kind of get their way, I guess, back into the lead at any point after that. Marcus Johnson said it had to have been planned. Like, they had to come in thinking, we're going to try and, I don't know, I'd say punk them, but pretty much kind of intimidate them and let's see how they react, because that's similar to what the Lakers did in that championship game of the in-season tournament championship game. Your thoughts, Brian, on how that whole thing started?
I like it. I like that energy and passion that the Bucks showed to start with. They really need that. I actually had just written an article today at Forbes how they need to change their mindset from being the hunted to become the hunter. This is a team that lost in the first round of the playoffs last year. They have a lot to prove. So I like that. Indiana did a lot of talking. Halliburton did that Dame Time celebration at the end of their last game, and Dame talked a little bit about that in his post-game interview. But I think, I mean, Dame's one that he's not going to give you a lot, right? He's just kind of even keel. But you take that personal when somebody mocks your celebration. When they outplayed the Bucks in that in-season tournament game, they really out-hustled them, outworked them. Milwaukee remembered that feeling, and they remembered what it was like, how Indiana was celebrating, how they approached that. So I think they wanted to send that message early that, hey, we are at the top of the food chain. You all are below us. You have to remember that. And so I think they wanted to knock them down a notch or two.
It was interesting. I was listening to NBA radio, Scalabrine, his morning show after the game, after the last game, Bucks and Pacers. And there were some Bucks fans that were calling into the show saying, man, they didn't care as much as the Pacers. Like, this wasn't a big deal. To the Pacers, it was probably everything to try and prove themselves to everybody to get in that championship game. It just didn't feel like the Bucks cared nearly as much as the Pacers. And I would say tonight, the Bucks probably cared more than the Pacers did coming into this game. The Pacers coming down off of getting the championship game, kind of back into regular season mode, relaxing a little bit. And the Bucks have been licking their chops, circling this game probably since they lost that game, knowing they're going to get them at Fiserv Forum and saying, we are going to teach this young team that we're still the team to deal with in the Eastern Conference, and don't get all the thinking you're going to beat us in a playoff series or anything of the sort. And I think this was definitely a statement game from this Bucks basketball team.
Yeah, these two teams still play two more times this year. because of that in-season semifinal game where they matched up, they have five games against each other. Indiana took the first two. So this rivalry isn't over. I was just looking it up. They actually play again on January 1st and January 3rd. So all the hoopla, everything that happened tonight is going to be fresh in their minds in 2 weeks when they battle, or 3 weeks, whenever that is, when they battle two more times. So that tiebreaker is important because Milwaukee needs to win out here if they are ever going to be in a position where they're tied with the Pacers, either at the top of the division or in playoff standings. So I think that I wonder if their mindset was looking forward to the postseason as well as what had happened previously in their first two matchups when Indiana really took it to them.
No surprise necessarily that Giannis was able to have his way with the Pacers. This is kind of what Nathan Marzion was talking about going into that last matchup, which is he can get to the rim at will. There's nobody that can stop him. They don't have anybody. They should be able to beat the Pacers just for that reason alone. And he played well in that game, you know, but it wasn't what we saw tonight out of Giannis. To me, the most impressive thing tonight was the amount of free throws he was hitting consistently. I mean, he didn't go like 10 of 26 or something. He had 22, 23 free throws. Without looking at the box score, he had a ton of free throws tonight. And if this dude hits free throws, you know, let's say he hits free throws at a 70% clip by the time we get to the postseason, if he's shooting a 70% clip, this is going to make him way more difficult to deal with come the playoffs if Giannis can keep this up at the line.
Yeah, he shot a career high 32 free throws tonight, which that's what happens when the Pacers don't have anybody to guard him. In the last game, they used a lot of Aaron Nesmith on him. This game, they mix and match. But when Giannis is bigger, when he's stronger, when he's faster than everybody is guarding, he's going to get to the free throw line because he gets to his spots, he gets to favorable positions, and then you see the Pacers are forced to foul him and send him to the line. But it's always great. He always has, 24 for 32. He missed several down the stretch because I think at one point he was like 12 of 14 or something like that. But it's always nice to see him when he starts knocking these down, because otherwise he kind of flirts with that line of is it the right move for the opposing teams to follow him and send him to the line, hope that he only makes one. But yeah, seeing these performances from him is good and hopefully something that he can build upon.
You are the film analyst, obviously, at Bucks Film Room on Twitter. If you don't follow Brian Sampson on Twitter, you're a fool, because he does a lot of great breakdown stuff that I think you will really, really enjoy. And I value his opinion as well. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about pick and rolls and what we thought was going to be the case coming into the year, which was Giannis and Lillard dominating, versus kind of how this has played out and the combinations that are working for the Bucks, in your opinion, better than what we've seen from Giannis and Lillard to this point.
Yeah, Giannis so Brooke Lopez, anytime we're talking about pick and rolls, he's at the center of it. He Yep. is the preferred pick and roll partner for both Giannis and Damian Lillard. And part of that, or the biggest reason, is he sets such great screens. He's what, 7'1", 7'2", I don't want to overweight him, but like 280 pounds or something like that. When he gets into those guys, especially you think of the smaller guys who are guarding Lillard, when he gets into them, you can't get around him. He's wide, he sets a really good screen. He's very intelligent about how he sets his screen. If you pay attention, he rarely sets it where he's perpendicular to the man. His screens are more flat, which give Giannis and Dame a little bit more creativity and leeway to pick which way they want to go. And then he'll quickly slide and turn it. He does get caught on some of these screens. You know, we see quite a few moving screens from him, but that's just part of it. But yeah, anytime we're talking pick and roll, he is both the preferred partner for Lillard and Giannis at this point, at least. When Giannis is setting those screens, and I think Dame is still trying to figure this out, he likes to leak off of them. He barely makes contact or just goes there and then ghosts them and tries to cut to the hole. So they're still trying to figure that part out. I would like to personally see him go into Brooke Lopez's playbook a little bit more and set really good contact screens, let Dame get downhill, and then Giannis can join the action. But we'll see how this partnership goes. We're only, 25, 24 games into the season. We'll see if they can grow it. I would like to see them spam it a little bit more just so they can get more reps, or even do a dribble handoff from Giannis to Lillard. Cause a lot of times when Giannis has the ball, his man will be playing off, not respecting the shot. And that's a perfect time to go into that dribble handoff, because all of a sudden you set the screen and your man's down in the paint. Lillard can come off the screen or the dribble handoff and catch and fire away. But a lot of time to work on that. They just aren't nearly where everyone thought they'd be at this point.
How much of that do you think is coaching? I mean, are they really going to have to coach these two up as far as how they need to play this together? Because I think the assumption was these are two top 75 players of all time. They're going to figure out how to play together. Like, it doesn't, because when Terry Stotts quit and left, I was like, man, this is not good. He was the maestro of this offense. And Nathan Marzion and everybody else said, Sparky, just chill out, man. Like, they got Giannis and Lillard. They'll figure it out. They'll be fine. I said, okay, all right, fine, we'll see. But I'm telling you here again, because he's been around, he knows the offense that he's running, he knows the keys to making this thing work. Him not being there and having Joe Prunty, who again was with Jason Kidd and everybody else, and wasn't necessarily running what Stotts was running, they've had to make adjustments, I'm sure, to this offense as time has gone on here. But when you're being technical and nitpicking as far as what you want to see and what would make it more effective, to me, I go back and I look at the coaches and go, okay, well, are we going to coach this up to be this way? Or are we going to sit, you know, with our hands underneath our legs and hope these two guys figure it out on their own? Because you just heard Giannis the other day talking about, well, we haven't had a lot of practices. I mean, this is kind of screwing us up with the schedule the way it is. Well, now they're home for what, six straight games. So they're going to get a bunch of practice time in here because now they don't play again until Saturday, right? So you have Thursday, Friday, and now you play back-to-back Saturday, Sunday, and then you get a break again. So hopefully these practices will lead to that. But for me, when you start talking about that type of stuff, that to me is coaching and getting on. And I don't care that they're superstars one way or the other. They have to be able to accept coaching and the willingness to try to get better to make this thing better.
Yeah. One of the hardest parts is being outside of the locker room or outside of the team. It's just, you're trying to make guesses, right? Or educated guesses. My guess is that losing Terry Stotts a week before the season hurts. Losing any coach a week before the season hurts. Especially when he was charged, he's brought to the staff to run their offense. And he's the only head coach that has experience. I mean, I'm not counting Joe Prunty's time where he ran the Bucks and
right.
Yep. And then with the Hawks too, I think he had a couple of games there. So Stotts was the only coach on the staff with any head coaching experience. And then you add in his familiarity with Dame and everything. So I think that was a big loss. I think that's part of why we need to give them a little bit of time to work things out for those reasons that you talked about. We'll see how it goes. I mean, their offense is what, third in offensive rating so far, something like that this year. So they are humming along. It'd be great to see them come or hit that next level. I also want to just see what their long-term plan is. Cause a lot of times what you see in December and November is just setting you up for the next progression for April, May. You know, what they're doing now is going to set their base for, all right, teams are scouting this look, but then they're going to have another option off of their offense or different plays like that or different sets. So I kind of want to see how that goes, but yeah, I think just overall, we thought that especially Giannis and Dame would be at a different level than what they are at now. I think it was a couple weeks ago, Lillard talked about how he goes over to Giannis's house to watch film all the time. So we know they're putting that work in. We know they're committed. We just have to see where they take it on the court.
I'd be interested in knowing who's the teacher, who's the pupil in this situation. As far as, is Lillard teaching Giannis stuff that maybe Giannis isn't thinking about and giving him ideas in different situations of what to do? And is Giannis maybe teaching Lillard stuff of what he likes to do, where he likes to be, and kind of helping Lillard understand, like, okay, this is where Chris likes to be in this moment. This is where I like to be in this moment. Brooke loves being here, you know, in this situation, because that is part of it too, right? Because you're the point guard. And again, on this team, that doesn't mean much necessarily because Giannis is bringing up the ball. Middleton's bringing up the ball. I mean, you got everybody and their mama initiating the offense outside of Damian Lillard. But the one thing that I keep seeing from a lot of people is they feel like Lillard's being passive at times inside of this offense. And to me, I go back to the Miami Heat days when they had LeBron, Wade, and Bosh to start, and they were struggling to find their identity that first year and then eventually ended up losing that title game to Dallas. But because there was a struggle of whose team was it, who's supposed to do what, when, and so forth, and trying to let everybody else do it. Do you think there's some of that maybe going on? They both deny it, obviously, publicly. But do you think Lillard is still trying to kind of fit in more than anything else?
Yeah, I think he's trying to figure out his place. For the first time in the NBA, and probably for the first time in his entire life, he's not the best offensive player on his team. That takes adjusting. I mean, he's what, 33 years old? So for the first time in three decades, he is looking to defer to somebody who's more talented offensively. We've seen it work where Giannis really takes that, what, first 40, 43 minutes to dominate, and then it comes Dame time the last five or so minutes. That seems to be how they figured it out so far. What I've been impressed with Lillard is how smart he is at just making the right read and not forcing anything. He just takes what the defense gives him. When Giannis is setting the screen, defense can't take away everything, and so he's done a great job of dishing when that pass is there, using his other teammates, but then also being aggressive when the time calls for it. He's usually a slow starter to begin the season, and we've seen that this year. So I wonder if that if that plays a role as well with he's kind of figuring things out, knowing that it'll take his legs some time to get under him. We've seen his shooting come back now, with the exception of these last two games. But really, I think he's trying to figure out where does he fit in the grand scheme of things and how can he assert himself outside of that final 5 minutes or 7 minutes or whatever. And part of that was him telling Adrian Griffin that he wanted to play the whole first quarter. At the beginning of the season, he wasn't doing that. And then he went to Coach Griffin and said, hey, for me, that's really what I prefer. And so now we see every single game, he plays the entire first quarter. Giannis plays the first 5 or 6 minutes, subs out for 3 or 4 minutes, and comes back in for the final 3 minutes or so. So I think he's starting to get his feel down as well.
If you're on Twitter following along at Sparky Radio, we're going to end the stream right here on Twitter. If you want to continue to follow the live stream, you can do it on the Odyssey Sports YouTube page. Otherwise, just download this bad boy tomorrow morning. You can hear the rest.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Of the podcast, then we'll take a quick time out, continue on Green and Growing. I want to talk about this Bucks defense because it's driving me nuts, I'll be honest. So we'll do that coming up next. Back on Green and Growing, Steve Sparky Fiverr, 1250amthefan.com, along with my guy Brian Sampson. You follow him on Twitter at Bucks Film Room. Follow me at Sparky Radio, of course, writer for Forbes and Dairyland Express. Download Green and Growing on your Odyssey app, wherever you download your favorite podcast at. And of course, you can stream us live on the Odyssey Sports YouTube page, as we're doing right now. Okay, Brian. The Bucks win. Giannis has 64. Everything is fine and dandy. They get the revenge on the Pacers. Everything's great. This Brook Lopez stuff, I'm sorry, dude. I'm losing my patience. If I have to watch Brook Lopez guard a guard one more time, he spends as much time on the perimeter at the three-point line guarding guards as he does down in the paint, actually being an effective shot blocker here under this Adrian Griffin-led defense. It's driving me absolutely bonkers. You've watched Bud's defense. You've watched Adrian Griffin's defense to this point. Again, small sample size with Griffin. I understand. But I much prefer the Brook Lopez and Bud's defensive scheme versus what I'm seeing right now. And I'm fearful that when you get to the playoffs and you start actually really scouting the Bucks and making adjustments game in and game out, how effective is he really going to be on the defensive side of the ball if they continue to play this way?
Yeah, we'll see. I think there's a lot of evolution that needs to happen with the Bucks defense from where they're at now to where they're going to be in the playoffs, both in the scheme that they're running, and let's see if they can make a move or two to upgrade their defensive backcourt. I think that would go a long way, both with the issues that you're talking about and just their overall defensive output. I think that's really, in my opinion, two of their biggest issues is Griffin believes in being really aggressive. That's one of the principles that I think got him this job is Milwaukee saw Budenholzer run a very passive defensive scheme. And a lot of times what we see in coaching changes is you go from one end of the spectrum to the other. And the answer is probably usually somewhere in the middle. It's probably not a very passive defense. We probably don't need a very aggressive defense. We probably need to mix and match and find that answer in the middle. And so I think that's what we've seen Griffin try to do a little bit, especially after the start of the season, but there's still work to be done. A lot of the Bucks defenders still guard 5-6 feet above the three-point line. Tonight, we saw Andre Jackson Jr. trying to pressure Haliburton the length of the court. That didn't work out well on number of possessions, if not every possession. So I think that they still need to find that right fit between, all right, what can their personnel actually do and what kind of scheme does Griffin want to run?
This is the thing, though. When he was in Toronto and Mutombo was in Toronto, they didn't have a true center until what, the end of last year or whatever, when they made that deal. They didn't have a Brook Lopez, a big, you know, slow, lumbering 7-footer that blocks shots through elbows, you know, and try to make space. They didn't have that. They had a bunch of smaller, more athletic dudes that were interchangeable parts that could shift all over the place. So when you play that defense, yeah, but you're playing that defense in large part because you don't have a shot eraser behind you. So now you do have one, and you're essentially going to negate him outside of maybe when you go to the 2-3 zone or something. You're going to negate him with all this switching that you're doing, and you're going to get him put on islands purposely by the opposing coaching staff to take advantage of a guard on him 9 out of 10 times, especially when you get to the postseason. That's what bothers me in this whole scenario, as far as whether or not he's utilizing his personnel the correct way. Now, again, if they had, I'm just going to pick some dude that's sitting out there on the beach right now watching this, Nerlens Noel, right, who's more athletic, that can move around a little bit better. Okay, fine. Maybe I get down with that if there's a more athletic type big other than Brook Lopez. But he's not the guy to be playing this defense when he's on the floor.
So a lot of what I think I've seen them play is switching 1 through 4 and trying to keep Brook out of that switching action. Sometimes that happens where he gets in that, but usually what they try to run is, I think, a switching action with 1 through 4 and Brook trying to play more of that drop coverage. I think one thing to your point about Griffin is a lot of times when you're a new coach coming into a situation, you're trying to overhaul the scheme because the team was bad, they've had failures, and that's not the case in Milwaukee. They've been the number one seed. They've been the best team in the Eastern Conference for the last half of a decade. And so I think that Griffin needed to do less of an overhaul and more of, all right, we have a foundation, or the Bucks have a foundation. They know what works on defense. Let's use that foundation, but then build out from there instead of just tearing the whole house down and trying to start new. I think that's one part that I've been a little bit discouraged by, is just, this isn't a 20-win team that he took over. This is a team that was the number one seed. Obviously, their playoff results weren't desirable last year, but using what has worked, what the Bucks had, one of the best defenses in the NBA, using that and then expanding from there instead of just coming in and tearing everything down.
Then don't get me wrong, I don't mind, you know, double teaming a guy that's hot and blitzing guys and forcing guys to do different things that is an aggressive type deal. I just, the Brook Lopez on guards, and we've seen it now several times this year, just drives me nuts. Okay, let's move on from that. What about Damian Lillard? When Lillard got here, everybody is like, oh, dude, he's horrible. Like, he's so bad. And it's like, okay, well, maybe he's not great. Fine. And I understand we're coming off of Drew Holiday. That was, you know, kind of that lockdown point guard that everybody thinks is, you know, the best defensive point guard in the league, or one of the best defensive point guards in the league. So anybody next to him isn't going to be him. I get that. And even Lillard said at one press conference, he's like, okay, I'm not him, but I'm not horrible like everybody's making me out to be at this point. You've got, what, 25 games or whatever it is to this point to watch the film and really, you know, kind of eye in on him and see what he's all about. What have you made out of his defensive performance to this point, Brian?
Two things. One, when he wants to turn up, he can. We've seen a couple of possessions here and there where he really goes at it. He's aggressive. He doesn't have the physicality and the length that Drew Holiday did, which limits him. You can, when you're guarding a 6'5 Tyrese Halliburton and you're, what, 6'2 like Damian Lillard is, there's only so much you can do, or some of these other players. So I've seen a couple of times where he's really competed. He's gone hard. What I haven't seen is him do that with any consistency over a long period of time. I see, when I went back and watched the film, I see a lot of ball watching from him where he stands and is watching the ball, probably using that time to rest so he can help carry the offense. But then he loses his man on offensive rebounds, or his man cuts to the yep. hole because he has his back turned to him. So I've seen a lot of that. That's really been the norm from Lillard, is a lot of ball watching. But he can turn up in these small spurts. I just want to see him do that for an extended period of time. I also think his defensive deficiencies are magnified because he's playing next to Malik Beasley, who also sucks on defense. Like that, I think if he had a good backcourt partner, then you can hide him more. Where here, right, it's Beasley's getting exploited, Lillard's getting exploited, they go back and forth. So I think that's part of the issue too. You know, if you're the one weak link, you're easier to hide. But when you are one of two weak links, it's hard.
I've seen a lot of people on social media, Bucks fans, of course, that aren't experts, suggesting that they should just put Beasley on the bench, let him come off the bench and shoot, and put one of these young dudes out there instead in the starting lineup where you don't have to rely on them to score. Your scores are all out there, and just have whoever the best defensive young guy is, put him out there, whether that's Beauchamp or Jackson or whoever it is out there, and see what they can do going forward. Pretty much saying they can't be worse than what they have out there now in Beasley. You've watched these guys as well. If you're Adrian Griffin and Prunty and that coaching staff in Mutombo, are you intrigued by maybe doing that at some point to see what it looks like? Or are you just going to play the vets and hope they get better?
This is where I clash with most of Bucks Twitter. For me, the young guys, you got to prove it at this 10 to 15 mark before you're going to get a starting job. You can't just think that, all right, this guy's potential, we're going to start him, play him 25, 30 minutes a game, and all of a sudden he's going to do something that he's not doing right now in his 10 to 15 minute role. So yeah, maybe Andre Jackson Jr. and Beauchamp can become those defensive stoppers, but they have to do it right now in their role and then work their way up. We haven't seen that consistently from them. Compared to Beasley, and I apologize, Beasley, I didn't mean to throw that stray at you earlier.
Oh, apologize. He's fine. Whatever.
I think he tries hard on defense, but defense isn't just about wanting. You actually have to have the skills. Like, you can't just all of a sudden, all right, I want to be a good shooter. Defense is the same way. But to my point, so I think that Beauchamp and Andre Jackson Jr. are better defenders than Beasley, but that doesn't mean that they're good defenders, if that makes sense. They're being graded on a relative scale. And we've seen them struggle. And we've seen them have some periods of success. Both are true. It's the answer is neither, or is usually never like one or the other. It's always both and. But as far as the young guys go, I want to see them be more consistent in this 10 to 15 minute role before thinking about throwing them into the starting lineup or increasing their minutes.
Time with Brian Sampson, of course, writes for Forbes and Dairyland Express. Follow him on Twitter at Bucks Film Room. You can follow me at Sparky Radio. Check out the interviews I do, 1250 AM, thefan.com. I want to talk about Bobby Portis because this is a dude that we talk about a lot on this podcast. Marzian wants to trade him, wanted to trade him in the offseason. It said he's fine in the regular season, but defensively he's not very good. And offensively, he kind of disappears in the postseason. So let's get somebody that actually can help in the playoffs. I want your thoughts on Bobby Portis, number one, just overall what you think. Because one of the things I told Marzian, I might have been on last week's podcast. I said, okay, if you get rid of Bobby Portis and he wants to get a wing defender, my point was, okay, well, then who else is going to be that guy that comes on the floor as a big? Because right now, he's the guy. So you could say he's horrible defensively, whatever, but he's still got size, and Robin Lopez is useless. So he's like the only guy that's got some size. And as I told Marzian, I'm like, and he's kind of like the enforcer. So someone's going to get kicked out of a game. I'd rather be Bobby Portis than Giannis if somebody tussles with Giannis, or if somebody tussles with Lillard or Middleton. Kick Bobby out. We'll figure out how to play a couple quarters without Bobby. But I don't want one of our stars getting kicked out because they lose their cool. And then tonight you see Giannis kind of gets thrown down, and I don't think it was totally malicious. I mean, the guy was trying to hold him up as he was going down. Portis freaked out, eyes bulging out of his head, and went running over there and wanted to take on the whole Pacers team. And I was just kind of smiling, going, good. I mean, that's what you want. You don't want anybody to kind of take advantage of your star. But I'm not as high on wanting to trade Bobby Portis because I think he serves a role on this team still kind of going forward. But your thoughts, Brian Sampson?
Yeah, so Bobby Portis, he is a great culture guy. He's a great connector for this team and for the fans too. His teammates love him. He plays hard. He plays with passion. I think he's one of the few guys on the team who brings that energy every single night and has that passion. I think that you need some of those guys on your team. And Milwaukee, in my opinion, is kind of right on the edge. They probably could use another one or two of those guys who bring that energy. So I think that's great. He can rebound well. He can score. That's needed, especially with the Bucks bench as it's constructed right now. We know he has defensive limitations. When they won the championship, he barely played the Nets, that he was really out of the rotation. And
they didn't play him at all
back in the latest series. Yeah. So we know that he has defensive limitations. especially that get exposed in the postseason. But your point is exactly my thought too, of if you trade him, then you need another big in return, or you need another big that you can rely on. Now they only have, they only run with three guys. So that's really a big issue for them, is trying to figure out then, all right, if you're going to move Portis, who else is going to step in there and help with that? Jay Crowder has played a little bit of four, but not too much. You're not going to want him playing that all throughout the regular season. So I would move him, but it'd have to be the right deal.
All right. So let's talk about a couple of other things here. As we're the fans of the Milwaukee Bucks, they've already got a championship. Damian Lillard was brought in to try and get Giannis to sign another extension. It worked. He signed another extension. Damian Lillard was brought in to help Giannis win his second championship and get Lillard his first championship at this point. Give me a couple of main points that you think has to happen between now and the time we get to the postseason to put them in a position, whether it be acquiring a player, whether it be schematic things that have to change or get better at, whatever, in order to going into the playoffs, that Brian Sampson will be like, they got everything they need. Just go what you're supposed to do, what you're supposed to do, and you should be able to, you know, go finish this bad boy off. Because I'm honest with you right now, I know they're the second best record in the East or whatever it is, but I don't feel like a lot of Bucks fans right now feel like this is a championship quality team as we sit here, you know, in the middle of December, even with Giannis scoring 64 tonight.
Yeah, two things. Number one, they need to adjust their scheme and dial back their pressure. They don't have the personnel to do that. That exposes them. If you're slow, not as quick as a person you're guarding, you shouldn't be pushing up on them. You should be trying to shrink the court and defend less space instead of more space. So that's number one. Adjust their schemes. I think Griffin does a nice job of mixing in zone. I think that can be a real weapon, but they need to adjust their man defense. In the postseason, you can't run zone and expect that to be successful over a seven game series. So that's the first thing. Dial back your scheme, dial back your pressure. And then the second thing is they need to get an elite defender. If you're going to go through the Boston Celtics, you need another wing defender. They have too much size for Milwaukee to slow down. If you're going to go through the Nuggets in the finals, who's going to guard Jamal Murray? You know, all these teams that the Bucks are going to have to go through, the Philadelphia 76ers with Tyrese Maxey, they all have a perimeter guy that Milwaukee can't match up with, even if they had the perfect scheme in the world. We've seen Horace be very aggressive at trade deadline. In the past, he has a Trailblazers second rounder to really work with. That's probably their only deal, and then a matching contract with either Bobby Portis or Pat Connaughton. So I think those two things of number one, dial back your scheme or your pressures. And then number two, you need to get either a guard who's actually good at defense or a wing who's good at defense. And then Beasley can slide to the bench, and I think that'd be a great fit for him, but you need somebody who can play that stopper role on the perimeter.
I'm all for trading Pat Connaughton. That's where Marzian and I differ, because Marzian's like, oh, playoff Pat, baby. Lights go on in the playoffs. He starts shooting the ball. Oh, okay, fine. But I'd much rather keep Portis. But again, I mean, Connaughton, you talk about that with Portis. I think Connaughton's, as you called it, a connector. I think Connaughton is the same type of guy, don't you, Brian?
Yeah. I go back and forth on him. So yeah, and now though, he's been in a slump for a year and a half. That's the difference between him and Bobby Portis. Is Portis has been more consistent. Connaughton has struggled for a year and a half of four games or five games against the Heat. So that's the issue. Is I think he's lost a step defensively this year. He's somebody who's kind of in between. He's a little bit switchable, but he can't really guard wings. He's not quick enough to guard guards. Not big enough to guard post players or forwards. So I'm not saying that they should move him, but I wouldn't be upset if they moved him in the right deal.
Yeah, I would think if they're going to get a really good player, like you're saying, Beauchamp, Jackson, I mean, somebody like that, one of those young guys are going to have to go along with whoever the vet is. And then if it's a second round pick from Portland or whatever, they're going to lose one of their young guys if they're going to try and go do this, plus a vet, plus a pick or something along those lines. Brian, thanks so much for coming on, man. And again, follow him on Twitter at Bucks Film Room. Check out all of his great writing for Forbes and Dairyland Express. And we'll have to do this again if you didn't hate it too much. And hopefully next time, Nathan Marzian will be with me to ask some questions too, besides myself. And he did have a question that he wanted me to ask, and I almost forgot. So before I wrap this up, I want to get his question in, because I asked him, if you have anything, let me know. So he put out a poll question today Bucks are currently 22nd defensively. Where do you think they'd be with Drew Holiday instead of Damian Lillard defensively if Drew Holiday was on this team? Same scheme, same dude coaching, Adrian Griffin, but it's Drew Holiday instead of Damian Lillard. How much better do you think this team would be, Mr. Brian Sampson?
That is a great question. I'm just trying to look up because for me, it comes down to points and not ranking. So I just am quickly looking up because I saw that poll question actually and thought that it was a very good one. So Bucks are 22nd in defensive rating. I think that they would be 17th. That'd be a whole point better. I think Drew Holiday would be worth 1 point per 100 possessions better. So I think that they'd be about 17th right now. I think that they still would have issues elsewhere. But yeah, that 17th is where I'd put them at.
So this poll has been up for, 11 hours or whatever it is. It's got almost 3,200 votes at this point. You said 17th, right? So that'd be 16th to 20th. His options, Nathan Marzan, you can still vote at least for another 13 hours. And right now it's 10:40 at night on Wednesday night. Top 5, 6 to 10, 11 to 15, 16 to 20. I'll vote 16 to 20. And that is 10%. 40% of the people said they would be between 6th and 10th defensively. 37% said between 11th and 15th. Why don't you think this team could be a top 10 defense by simply switching out those two?
Yeah, I think it's just hard. So I'm looking at it. So if they were to move down to 10th, that'd be 3 points per 100 possessions. For me, that just seems a lot for one player. I mean, we know Drew Holiday is great. They're going to move into 6th. That all of a sudden becomes 5 points per 100 possessions. So for me, that's what it's about. Like, I think they'd be improved, obviously. But I think that I would still, and I spoke about it a little bit on this here, is the two issues of the scheme and the personnel. Drew Holiday is a great defender. He would help with some of that, but they still then are trying to run that same scheme with the rest of the personnel that doesn't fit. So definitely would be better. It just comes down to me of how many points I think one player can save.
Man, offensively, he'd cost you a bunch because he's not the scorer that obviously Lillard is. And again, that's the trade-off, right? So you're going to get more points from that position, but you're also going to give up more points from that position. And then it's just, is it worth, do you get more scoring than you do give, giving up? And that's the trade-off they had to decide on. And I'm sure they decided that Lillard's going to score more than he's going to give up. And that's why part of the reason why they made the deal. Again, at Bucks Film Room, follow Brian Sampson, and hopefully we'll get him on again throughout the course of the season. Appreciate you so much, Brian. Thanks a lot for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.